Welcome to the Feminem Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Risa E. Lewis, Feminem Advisory Board, hashtag 618 Organizing Committee, left-handed vegetarian, espresso drinker, and yes, point of cure ultrasound director at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia.
And I am Dara Cass, the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Feminem, and for most days, the main host of the Feminem podcast. But
Dara has graciously allowed me to run with my idea, this idea of inviting Brian on the podcast, Dr. Brian Zink. Thank you, DK.
You're welcome.
Today we're going to, so much appreciated. And today we're going to talk about leadership. Specifically, a unique leadership program founded by Brian and the Academic Chairs Academy of SAEM. This is the CDP, the Chair Development Program. Dara, can you please introduce our special guest?
Well, that would be my pleasure, Risa. I like being the second. I like being the, like, you know, second guest host. It's nice. So Dr. Brian Zink is a professor and Senior Associate Chair for Education and Faculty Development in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of Michigan. He's a former chair of emergency medicine at Brown University, Rhode Island Hospital. Dr. Zink's primary areas of focus are mentoring, faculty and leadership development, education, medical humanities, the history of emergency medicine, and currently policy making in healthcare, which again, Risa, these are a lot of primary interests. So Dr. Zink, thank you for coming and being so broad in your primary interests.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Dara and Risa. It's great to be here. I'm decaffeinated, unlike Risa, but I'm it's good to be here to talk about the Chair Development Program, and let's let it roll.
Okay, so, you know, for each of these podcasts, we have show notes. We'll be sure that people have links and follow up to what we talk about on today's show. Dara, do you want to tell our audience some FAQs, frequently asked questions about the CDP?
Well, that would be my pleasure, Risa. So I think the first thing to discuss is what is the CDP? And as somebody that is still further away because of my extraordinarily young age from being considered developmental, potential for a chair, I wouldn't know about the program if it was not for my much older and wiser friends who might be considering using the program. So the AACEM Chair Development Program, hereforth known as the CDP, is a leadership training initiative now in its fifth year. It's really designed to enhance the capabilities and the effectiveness of new and aspiring academic EM chairs through skill development, advisory, and mentorship. The theory was basically that if you could create a more informed and capable pool of potential chairs, then and as they got appropriately promoted into those positions, they would improve both patient care, education, and research in emergency medicine. So then the real question is, you know, how is this different than other leadership programs for any physician, specifically anyone in EM? And I think that the real...
I think essentially what you're saying is, why is this night different from all other nights?
You know, it's funny. Why is this night? Brian, why is this night different from all other... No. For our non-tribe members, of course, that is it.
That's right.
A shout out to the Passover, as we have just completed the Passover.
Right.
So anyway, so I think the CDP is a little different because it consists of five specific leadership training sessions that are focused on areas that are specific to the pool of leader that an academic emergency department would be looking for. The sessions range from like 8 to 10 hours, which is a total of, you know, 40 to 50 total in-person training hours in the field of being a leader in academic emergency medicine. The sessions provide new and aspiring chairs with practical and EM-specific leadership training and are held actually near the SAM headquarters in beautiful downtown Des Plaines, Illinois, close to Chicago. And it's funny how Chicago is really the epicenter of education and development in all of emergency medicine, right?
Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
Right. Shout out to those who just finished their oral boards last week. As many of our brethren out there are excited to have no longer practicing the game of emergency medicine. Anyway, so for now they're in Chicago, although I guess it could change for a warmer climate if the forces aligns or global warming catches up with Chicago. Anyway, And it's in conjunction with the AACEM, AAAEM retreat, which are all acronyms for groups affiliated with SAEM, the Society for Academic Emergency Medicine, and its annual meeting, which happens every May, in addition to the ACEP or ASAP Scientific Assembly, which happens in October. CDP instructors are usually experienced chairs in emergency medicine, their deans, administrators, as well as other leadership development experts. And it focuses on areas that may not be covered in other leadership courses. I think that the personal advising and mentorship of the program is probably what sets it apart from other courses. And the requirement of participants is really not much other than come, right? So they have to go to 4 of the 5 sessions and really dedicate themselves to the offerings that are available, including the readings and assignments. And then when they finish the course, they receive a certificate from AACEM in the chair leadership program. So Brian, did I do the program description justice?
You did it fine. And it's, I can expand a little bit on how it developed if you'd like.
Yeah, I would love to know. So what made you even do this? I mean, this seems like a pretty big offering out of your goodwill and free time.
Well, it wasn't a huge salary that came with it. So no, it's a voluntary effort. And but when I was president of the chairs group, we recognized that a number of senior chairs at around that time were going to be transitioning and new chairs are being appointed. And there was no formal preparatory training experience for newer aspiring chairs. I had the experience of becoming the inaugural chair at Brown, where I had come out of the dean's office at University of Michigan. And I knew some things about emergency medicine and medical education, but I could have, for instance, used some training and advice in the clinical operations realm and in department finances and the like. So I think a lot of us recognize that there was a need for training that could make, especially your first couple years as a chair, much easier and more productive if you were able to have some basic training, almost like a boot camp. So I talked to other chairs at the time and other leaders within AACEM, Jim Adams and Ted Christopher and others, and we decided to launch it. And so we developed a curriculum. We got commitment from people to be our speakers and hosts. And we really did design it as an adult learning approach where these are not hour-long lectures or PowerPoint presentations. It's basically having experts introduce the subject, and then we have discussions. They might be whole group discussions. It might be small groups. It might be different exercises we do. We do something called Strengths Finder exercise, but just a lot of stuff that is oriented toward the specific issues that come up when you're a chair in emergency medicine. So that could be, you know, hiring and recruitment of in EM. We talk about diversity. We talk about finances and just everything, personnel issues. And a lot of it's case-based stuff so that we're just pulling from the experiences that all of us have had and we're passing it on to the next generation of chairs.
And I can say, you know, one of the pieces of the program that should be highlighted is the networking that occurs. You're essentially developing a cohort that's going to be the peer educators, peer mentors for each other. And already, so I'm participating in the CDP this year. I had heard about it for years, and the people I heard about it from were other point of care ultrasound division leaders. And they all said that what they got out of the program was a lot preparing them for potential chair positions, but more were just leadership and also a colleague group across the country that they could call. And I think, Brian, to your point, when you do become a chair and you have questions, you don't know where to turn, or you're looking for creative solutions, you already know about 20 to 24 people around the country to call.
Yeah, that's right on, Risa. For instance, we just had a chair from 2 classes ago who just was named to be chair at a university, and there's still an email connection and just the flood of emails congratulating that person for getting their chair position. So people stay connected, and you'll see them at the SAM or ASAP meetings. They'll be out having drinks or going out to dinner because the class becomes pretty close over time. And you're right, it is a cohort, and they're at various stages, but undoubtedly some are already going on to become chairs within 2 or 3 years, and then they're serving as advisors and mentors for the people who aren't quite there yet.
So one question I had is, from what I understand, originally the way the CDP was designed, it was thought that people in their first year of their chair position would be taking this. But over time, there seems to be a trend of people that are in vice chair positions or are anticipating going into chair positions in the next 2 to 5 years. Is that accurate? Have you seen that change, or is that the applicant pool?
Yeah, but even in the first class, we were always open to new chairs, obviously, because they had the most need and would directly benefit from the training the most. But we also thought that those who might become chairs in the next few years, that we wanted to have them do it. We did have more chairs in the first couple of years, but it's always been this mix of chairs and aspiring chairs. And we're seeing lately some people in the CDP who are a bit more junior, and we don't have any issues with that as long as their chair is supportive and thinks it's a good time for them to do the program. But you don't want to do it too early, because the training is so specific to what's happening right now in emergency medicine that it wouldn't make sense to do the CDP a decade before you actually are going to become a chair, because the issues may be different. And we try to be very topical on what's happening. You know, when MACRA came about, we had sessions on MACRA, and as we're having more issues with boarding nationwide in emergency departments, you know, Risa, this year we talked quite a bit about boarding, whereas 3 years ago we weren't talking quite as much about
that. So wait, let me ask you a question about the flow. If you, for example, take the course, let's say, and don't become a chair in a year or two, would you take it again if you think that it's pretty timely to becoming a chair?
You know, we haven't had people reapply or do
remedial.
CDP. No, it wouldn't be remedial. Actually, I think you could benefit through going. I've sat through just about every one of the sessions for the last 5 years, and I learned something every time. So you know, we haven't had that happen. But if someone did do it and then, you know, just by chance, you know, was not going to be a chair till 7 or 8 years later, I think it wouldn't be unreasonable for them to take it again.
All right. So then I'll ask you some numbers questions. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, I mean, I think we're going to want to know how many people are in the program every year, but specifically about the women in the program, right? So what have been your experiences between you and AACEM in the efforts to increase the number of women participating in the program, and then how that returns on them becoming chairs? Like, when you started, did you find that you had how many women participants versus, you know, at year six? And I think that all folds into the idea that women, you know, when we're talking about the number of women chairs at the highest level, one of the best ways to say to somebody she's both qualified and available is a program like this could easily curate somebody who is high potential and brand them with a very specific and verifiable seal, if you will, that says that she's completed this program, which is run by the top chairs of the country. So she is objectively qualified. So I guess start with the numbers and then go into that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And so the CDP, we started out with about 12 or 13 in the initial classes, and then we've grown up to be 23 this year. I think we're going to probably stop at about that number, because the cohort, I think, stays really tight right around that size. But we've grown. So I would point out that all of the women who have applied to the CDP for the past 5 classes have been accepted to the program. But we were somewhat disappointed with the low number of women who applied in the early years. And there were actually a couple cases where I felt a woman chair or aspiring chair would have benefited from the program and made those people aware of it. But for lots of reasons, they weren't able to do the program. And then because of this, and because, as you know, when I was at Brown, I really focused on recruiting and developing women faculty. And we had one of the highest percentages of women faculty at Brown Emergency Medicine of anywhere in the country. And so it was always a kind of a priority area for me. So I was concerned with the small numbers that we had of women. And so we made a more concerted effort in the past 2 years working with AWEM to try to promote the CDP and to make sure that women are not hesitant to apply. And the numbers are better in the past 2 years. They're still not where I'd like to see them. So in 2017, we had 5 women out of a class of 19. And then in 2018, we had 6 out of the 23. I'd like to see that increase in the future. But I am happy to note that all of the 4 women who did the CTP in the first 3 years, again, there weren't many of them, but they now are all chairs of emergency medicine. So we're you know, we're pleased with the results, but we would like to see a greater number.
Well, before you say, I will just give you some numbers feedback in a good way, which is to say that the 6 out of 23 is actually a 26% women members, which is double the current number of women chairs in emergency medicine nationally, or certainly in any field. So in theory, if you were to just even, and I'm not saying we should stop there, but if you were to even see those 6 out of 23 to fruition year over year, you would have contributed in theory to doubling the number of women chairs in our specialty. So even though it feels like, you know, you want to start now and have to 50%, you know, in the first few years, because that's how you've aspired to run your departments as you've had them, efforts like this can actually, I mean, literally double and triple the number of women in leadership because the numbers are so small to start. The gains, I guess, can be so big. And so I think that that perspective helps us frame, like right now we're looking at 3 out of 23 would be a number to be on par with where we are, right? If you think about how dramatic that is. To put it into some perspective. So I think that although all 4 of the women are now in the first 3 years are now chairs, that's amazing. And I'd love to see the next whatever 15 that have completed become as well. So Risa, do you have any more questions for Brian?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking a lot about these numbers, and Dara, that was very, very nice. You gave a very nice interpretation on, you know, how the program's doing and where it is going to make a mark. I do believe the program's going to make its mark. In terms of chairs, but also in terms of women chairs. You know, what's curious to me is I found out about the program two big avenues. Number one, reading the SAN newsletters, but also 3 colleague friends, men, were the ones that told me about it. And so this is always the question in academics, and specifically I think chairs and leadership in emergency medicine, you know, there's a little bit of why don't women apply? Why don't women put themselves forward? And as we know, and we've talked about this on other programs, you know, women don't ask, or we don't get the same rules, or we're not told the playbook, or fill in the blank. You know, there's dual responsibility here. And so I think that for some reason, there's not an awareness among women that they can aspire to and take on leadership positions. I do think also there is this phenomenon that we see in mid-career women that decisions are made for them, like, oh, they're busy at home, or oh, they're not interested in being a chair. And so in terms of someone promoting, or, and I've seen this, chairs promoting faculty, they decide who is interested in being promoted. They decide who is going to be put up for a leadership program. So I think there's work to be done both individually, like the women, but I also think chairs and leaders in emergency departments can do a better job of tapping women. And so it is true, like the Academic Chairs Academy is working with the Women's Academy, and there's a scholarship, and there's also a scholarship that's comes through the Diversity Academy. But we want more than just a scholarship. We want people from a general pool applying. We want this to be an attractive program for everybody and for everybody to know about it. When I was applying for the program this year, there were a few of us that talked about applying together. And I sent it out to a bunch of mid-career women to put it on their radar. And I was surprised at how many didn't even hear about the leadership program. So I think one thing to think about is how to communicate and send out the message and the opportunity more. Dara, you had mentioned about this program, why it's unique. It's not just that you have to show up and there's a little bit of homework, but you do have to be sponsored by your chair. It's got to be somehow paid for, and there's got to be a commitment to giving you the clinical time off to participate. So we did have a question written down that I'll put out to the group, and then I encourage Brian to have questions for us, Dara.
And I have more questions for Brian.
Yeah, Brian, what do you see as the barriers, answering a question like, why haven't more women apply? Why don't more women apply? Why aren't we seeing, an equal number of applicants coming from both men and women?
Yeah, well, I think you covered some of it very, very eloquently there in terms of what could be happening with women being pegged in a certain way as their careers advance. So I think the lean-in issue may be active here. It may be that women in academic emergency medicine who are advancing in a leadership realm don't see themselves as future chairs, or think probably more likely they don't think they're ready to be considered in that light. And I've had that discussion with a couple of women who were like, well, yeah, I'd like to do the CDP, but I'm not ready yet, am I? And it's like, well, yeah, you are. All the men think they're ready. Why don't you think you're ready? So, I think that better mentorship and coaching and sponsorship of women leaders is needed along these lines. Some of it could be a pipeline thing. And, as we know, the overall number of women, the numbers in academic emergency medicine are still rising. And the number of women who are at the assistant level is higher in proportion than those who are at the associate professor level. And we're really looking for people who are probably at the associate professor level, although we have accepted people who are at the assistant professor level into the program. But I'm hopeful that we're going to continue to increase the percentage of women and others who are underrepresented in emergency medicine. And it also makes the CDP better when we have a more diverse group in the class, certainly. And the AWEM and ADIM scholarships have been a great way to promote the CDP. All the women who have done it have given it very positive reviews, as you've kind of indicated. And I'm very happy that my good friend Susan Stern, who's the chair at the University of Washington, who was in the first CDP class, she's now going to serve as a co-director of the CDP because we want to have someone who's a current chair. And as I'm no longer a chair, I'm recovering chair, as they say. Sue will co-direct it with me. So we will have a woman co-director moving forward.
So do you know any other, there's a lot of people listening to this podcast who actually aren't in emergency medicine. They're in other fields. Yeah. Do you know of any other program like this in other fields that are specific for chair development in their field and also looking to increase deliberately the diversity of the chair population in their specialty?
I do not. I mean, I know of programs like ELAM and others that are specifically oriented toward women's leadership development. But I don't know of other specialties that have something specific to this. I've heard that OB-GYN does, but I'm not certain. I haven't seen the program, but I think that there are there probably are other programs similar to this out there, I think from our standpoint, we kind of home grew it. We're very interested in learning more about what the other specialties or organizations are doing. But this has worked well, and it seems to be filling a niche in a needed area for people. And I do want to point out that it's not tremendously expensive. We tried to keep the tuition as low as we can, just to break even, so that we can buy the box lunches and have a little reception and this and that. But the tuition is $3,950, so it may go up slightly, but it's a pretty good deal for 50 hours of training. And some of the other things we do, the StrengthsFinder thing, we have books. You get to go to the SAM Leadership Forum for free, and there are a number of benefits. So it's a pretty reasonable cost, and most chairs are very happy to sponsor, their faculty to do this.
So let me ask you another question. If anyone was listening and they thought that they were qualified, so how would you describe your ideal CDP candidate, gender neutral, somebody who you think is primed for this program? And then I want you to describe the person, and then I want you to describe it as if you were a chair. How would you identify that person in your department? Do you understand the two different perspectives?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think, the ideal person would be within, say, 3 years of being considered either at their home institution as a chair, because there's going to be a transition, or that they're ready to go out and look in the opportunities that are out there. And there are going to be a lot of opportunities coming up in the next few years as this kind of group of chairs is moving to retirement. So I think someone who's about, maybe 3 years, probably five at the most, away from being a chair, who has some leadership experience. And it doesn't matter if their leadership experience is more in research or more in education or more in clinical operations, but they've got some leadership experience, and they are willing to really engage in the program, very enthusiastic. They're not just going to come and occupy a seat, that they're going to be really involved, participate in discussions, do the readings, really be super enthusiastic about the program. So that's kind of the ideal person. And then as a chair, I've been, again, encouraging people all over the country to apply for the program. But I would want someone who is is ready to take the next step and feels like they have areas of that they need to develop. So they've done a self-assessment and they know that there are things that they would like to improve, whether it's communication skills or management skills or their awareness of finances or how to be a better education leader or how to build research programs, that everyone comes in to the program with certain areas that they know really well and then others that they're going to be not as accomplished in or have as much knowledge in. And we try to give you a pretty broad palette of offerings so that you could absorb all that. And then when you are a chair, you'll be able to look back on some of what you learned here and be able to apply it.
Brian, I would say one of the things that you could do is basically challenge all of your chair colleagues, you know, put something on the email listserv that each should put forth an applicant to the CDP. And that kind of goes to a specific question in terms of numbers. What's the acceptance rate right now if one applies to the CDP? Like, how good of a chance do people have to get in?
It's about 95%. We have had, there was one person who I said, I just think you're too junior. It was someone that was just maybe, I think like, you know, 3 or 4 years out of residency who had applied. And I didn't want to be too discouraging that person, but I said, you got a lot of time to do this program. And I would encourage you to wait a couple of years. But other than that, we basically accepted everyone who has applied. And as I said, we've accepted all women who have applied to the program. So, again, you have to be sponsored by your chair. That discussion has to occur between the applicant and her chair for the tuition money and to provide the time. But really, it's not a lot of additional time in that we're doing this in conjunction with the major emergency medicine meetings that are held each year. So other than 2 days in March and then the January sessions, it's really not a huge amount of time.
I think it also helps provide a neutral space for somebody to both convey their interest in being promoted and have an ask that is verifiable that will objectively contribute to their qualifications in that promotion, right? So if you think about it, if you go to your chair and say, listen, I'd really like to go to the chair development program because I know I have done this research and I think it's really good for me. You've expressed that you're ready to move on, which may trigger your chair to look for other positions they may suggest to you or help you think about moving on to an institution. But I think it also allows you to feel like you're asking for something like recognition, maybe that you would not ask for if there wasn't a specific like nugget to push forward on. So I think it's a really good exercise for somebody to even ask to be sponsored for the program, because I think that a lot of reasons why people who may, I don't know that it's a gendered thing, but who you might consider ready for the program, Brian, haven't been sponsored by their boss is that they've never suggested it themselves. And the person, like benevolent sexism and other biases we have, may not think that person even wants to be a chair, right? And so I think that would you be offended if somebody came up to you in your department, let's say in Michigan now, and said, you know, I have a question for you, Brian. Would you consider going to the chair and asking if I could be sponsored for the CDP at SAM?
No, I think that we need more of that because, as you say, there are some people who kind of sit back and wait to be nominated, and there are others who will be more forward. And I think not to stereotype. I mean, there are men who sit back and don't think of advancing themselves or promoting themselves too. But I think in general, women will sit back a little bit and feel like they need to do more or have more experience or more titles under their belt before they will seek advancement to the next level. But I think we've talked about this when I was a chair at the chairs groups about trying to encourage more people to do the program. I mean, realistically, I think anyone who's a vice chair in emergency medicine right now would benefit from this program. And even if they don't go on and become a chair, I've had a couple people in the program who said, once I learned about what being a chair was all about, I decided that I don't want to be a chair. that I'd rather stick with, with my research interests or with my education focus. And you know, now that I know more about it, it's probably not for me. And that's a good result of the Chair Development Program. If someone feels like they can make an informed decision that they don't want to go forward, I don't think that's a failure.
Yeah, I think Brian, you really accurately describe what we know to be the imposter syndrome, where there's this feeling, and everybody suffers, has this as a part of them to a certain extent, from this, I'm not ready yet, I'm not qualified, and it works both ways. And so I think, you know, even having this dialogue, even recording this podcast, hopefully will move the needle for individuals and for women as a whole.
Yes. So I guess that's a good chance for us to thank Dr. Zink, Brian, for coming on the Feminine Podcast.
It's been my pleasure, and I hope the message gets out there, and we look forward to a lot more applicants and women applicants in the future to the CDP, and I'll look forward to interacting with people as they go through the program.
And I want to plug that we want diversity of all kinds as new chairs.
Right.
And so I think that that's, you know, as the Feminine Podcast, this obviously becomes our primary agenda. But one of the things we've learned, and I think that we're convinced about, is that the more diversity of chairs we have in our specialty, we are leading the way in every front, and we're not leaders in this form. And I think that we need to be better at this. So I look forward to more applicants of all diversity categories, let's leave it there, applying for chair positions, certainly through the CDP. Risa, do you have any last words?
No, well said. And why don't you take us home with announcements for next week?
So our Feminine announcements are thus. We have no new announcements for the Fix conference since we're sold out. We have a Fix tickets, so the resident viewing room is open for business. We're actually in the process of developing some very cool sponsorships only for the resident room, which is mostly free stuff. So we know that if residents are going to come to the conference, they're going to be able to get cool free swag or raffles on things like scrubs and shoes and other kind of resident accoutrement. So yes. And so that's that. And then on next week's Feminine Podcast, we are going to have Allison McGregor as coming to, she's going to give us her talk from last year's, Fix conference. And ironically, Brian, Allison is one of your,
she's one of our all-stars at Brown, and I'm very happy to have hired her and helped her develop. So
right.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah. So her lecture was called Sex and Gender in Emergency Medicine. Will you be part of the solution or part of the problem? And, you know, I, not to kind of appropriately time this podcast recording as it is, but Brown itself has made its a department a leader in the study of sex and gender in medicine, specifically in the actual study of medicine as it affects women. And then, of course, in the leadership of women in medicine. So both of those forms. Allison is a leader in this field, and the only other official, there's three TED talkers at the conference, Amy Ho and Alice McGregor. And Risa, who was the other person that did a TED talk?
I'm not sure who did a TED Med talk.
It might have been you. So anyway, so Allison's amazing, and you should definitely download her podcast next week. So with that, I'm going to say thank you to both of you. And I look forward to seeing everyone at SAM next week. And with that, Brian and Risa, see you next week.
Sounds good. See you in Indianapolis.